Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, appropriately enough, Michael Cutler. It is August the 5th, 2016. I'm delighted that you're joining me. Time to play that game of catch-up and find out the madness of the world that has been going on, especially inside the borders of these 50 United States of America. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent of the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. And you know that I have a bunch of websites, so let me just mention them if you're new to my program. Please go to michaelcutler.net. That's one word, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R. For many years, I've been very happy, very proud to be working with a great group of folks out in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org is their website. I'm also a writer, an author for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center, Front Page Mag, a great website. I write for The Social Contract. I also, pardon me, most recently have been writing for LifeZette, L-I-F-E-Z-E-T-T-E. So I have a bunch of places where you can check out my articles, but the bottom line is that ever since the attacks of 9/11, when terrorists were able to game the visa process, game the immigration system, gain access to our country, and devastate our nation, and the ripples are still reverberating around the world, I made my mind up that I needed to get my perspectives out there. I've been involved with the enforcement of the immigration laws for 30 years. I've been involved with terrorism investigations. I spent half of my 30-year career with the Drug Task Force. The bottom line is that immigration is the key to the challenges and the threats that America and Americans face. And this isn't about scapegoating aliens. Quite the contrary. People who legally come to the United States are finding that the country they thought they were coming to is not really the country that they came to. This government of ours and both political parties bear responsibility, have steadfastly refused to secure our nation's border, refused to enforce our immigration laws, came up with more excuses than there were grains of sand in the beach. We can't deport 11 million. We need to have the immigrants. We're a nation of immigrants. Let's get some of the language straight. And again, if you're familiar with this, this is old story. For those of you new to my website, to my radio program, this might be a little bit new. But please understand that America's immigration policies are among the most generous in the world. We admit more lawful immigrants than the rest of the world combined, roughly a million. If you listen to the open borders anarchists, Chuck Schumer and the Democrat buddies of his, and if you listen to what we're hearing on the other side from Paul Ryan over with the Republicans, you know, we're a nation of immigrants. And there's got to be a legal way for these people to be here. There is a legal way. And we already admit a million lawful immigrants. We admit tens of millions of non-immigrant temporary visitors who come here on tourist visas, come under the insane visa waiver program that I've been writing about and talking about, because it takes down a very important layer of security for our country to placate the United States Chamber of Commerce. We now have nearly a half million foreign students studying the STEM curriculum, science, technology, engineering, and math, inside the United States. We keep getting the same lies. Well, we just don't have the schools to turn out the engineers and the computer programmers. What can we possibly do? We need to import the world's best and brightest. And we hear that garbage from some of the very same politicians who love to talk about American exceptionalism. On the one hand, this is an exceptional country, but on the other hand, we're exceptionally stupid because we have to import foreign workers, and it's a lie. There is no shortage of Americans to do the job. In fact, every year, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of American workers are being fired. These are scientists, they are technicians, they are programmers, they're engineers, and predominantly they're being replaced by citizens of India. If there's a shortage of Americans to do the job, why are we firing Americans? Now, look, I understand if someone's not doing the job properly, they should be fired. No argument. But when companies on a wholesale level fire Americans, Disney lays off hundreds, every company, HP, fired 30,000 a couple of months back, company after company across the board, dumping Americans like yesterday's dead fish, and then screaming, oh, my God, we don't have the workers we need. Yeah, you just fired them. And why did they fire them? They fired them not because these people lacked the qualifications, not because they didn't have the education or the skills. Many of these people were loyal employees in some cases for decades. It's that these unscrupulous bums that run the companies found that they could get people from India to work for lots less money. So we're not talking about minimum wage jobs now. And if you look at the law, as long as they pay programmers and other high-tech workers more than $60,000 a year, it's okay to fire Americans. So if you have an American who's making $100,000, $150,000 a year, and believe me, people that earn that kind of money earn that money. This isn't, you know, corporate welfare. The corporate welfare is going to the executives who are canning Americans, the Zuckerbergs and the Gateses and all those thugs, these economic thugs. So they fire Americans, they bring in foreign workers. This suppresses wages across the board in our industries. This is why the middle class is not going up in wages, but coming down. And then they wonder why the economy is not working. The economy, folks, isn't working because we keep firing Americans, bringing in foreign workers, and the foreign workers do what's reasonable. I don't blame the foreign workers. They're 100% right for what they're doing. They're doing something that makes sense for them. They come here because they make more money than they would in India, and they send money back to their families. We're losing hundreds of billions of dollars a year in remittances. What they're doing is logical and rational. If you could go to India, and if let's say you would normally be making $100,000 in the United States, but you could make $300,000 in India, what would you do? And the American government is facilitating this transfer of American dollars to the Indian economy. John Kerry talked about it indirectly when he gave a commencement address at Northeastern University. And he said, we can't hide behind walls, an obvious cheap shot at Donald Trump. It's supposed to be a commencement address, not a political rally. Criticized Trump, said you can't hide behind borders, said don't look inward. Of course not, because what do you see inward? American roads and highways and bridges crumbling even after the Obama administration took God knows how many hundreds of billions of dollars supposedly to fix infrastructure and the money went missing. I wonder how that happened. Maybe some of it got sent to Iran. I mean, they just sent them $400 million that wasn't ransom money that resulted in the release of Americans who were illegally held hostage. But there's nothing to see here, folks. Keep on moving. And John Kerry said, don't look inward, but look at India. Look at China. Their middle class is growing. Don't look inward. Be happy that China has a growing middle class. China, ladies and gentlemen, is our adversary. They're building their nuclear navy. They're building squadrons of fighter airplanes. They built an artificial island in the South China Sea. And they warned American naval vessels, stay away or else. Their airplanes have buzzed our airplanes. Obviously, they're our good allies. Could you imagine Great Britain doing this to Americans or Germany or Israel? Of course not. But we build our factories there. They treat their workers like garbage. When their workers were so despondent, so depressed over the horrific conditions under which they were making those nice, shiny Apple products and all those other wonderful products, they jumped out the window. And, of course, China, being a compassionate country, our partners, you know, What did they do? Did they address the reasons why these people jumped? No. They erected nets to catch the falling bodies. That's where we build our companies. That's where we build our factories, over there, where there's nets surrounding the buildings to catch the people trying to commit suicide. This is lunacy. And if you dare say that we should be hiring Americans, you're a nativist. So I have a confession. If by the term nativist you mean somebody who wants to see Americans, irrespective of race, religion, ethnicity, origins, culture, whatever, if you think that it's that I'm a nativist because I want to see all Americans of every flavor do well, you're damn right I'm a nativist, and so should every other American. We need to look out for ourselves because sure as hell, our government is not. And I've written a couple of articles for capsweb.org. Last week, I looked at Hillary Clinton's outrageous nonsense. She stands there with her goofy sidekick, Tim Kaine. Oh, we're going to raise your wages. We're going to get you the jobs. No one's explained how. We are now admitting more authorized foreign workers into the United States on most months than the number of new jobs that we're creating. And then the Labor Department pumps out these great numbers. Oh, we've created all these jobs. And what they don't tell you, what were the wages of those jobs? I'd love to know when these great numbers came out today and unemployment fell to 4.9%. Isn't that a great number, 4.9? All you have to do is ignore 95 million working age Americans who aren't working. What does that statistic even mean? In the days of the old Soviet Union, Pravda and Izvestia, the two propaganda arms of the Soviet government, wouldn't have the unmitigated chutzpah to lie the way our own Labor Department now lies. They talk about the jobs, how many were part-time, how many were minimum wage, how many were in the service industry. All we know is that the jobs that they talk about weren't in agriculture. Whoopee-doo. So you're watching wages crumble, Americans losing their jobs, Americans going from being middle-class, tax-paying, home-owning consumers through no fault of their own because they're being stabbed in the back by corporations, aided and abetted by the Obama administration that Hillary wants to emulate. In fact, has complained that Obama's too much to enforce the immigration laws. So magically, even though we're going to bring in even more foreign workers, and even though she wants to legalize every illegal alien in America, and forget the 11 or 12 million figure, folks, it's probably 30 to 40 million, and there are aliens who aren't here yet who will come if we ever launch that act of national suicide and claim they've been here for the required period of time. And here's two things you need to know. Three things. If we process that many applications, there will be absolutely no face-to-face interviews. There will be no field investigations. How in the world can you process tens of millions of applications and interview everybody? What are we going to do? Hire 100 million employees? We'll have the 95 million unemployed Americans go work and do the adjudications? I mean, this is nonsense. We will be approving those applications as quickly as the postal machines move the envelopes through the machines, if you've ever seen how that works. It'll just be zip, 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 zip. It'll be automated. And you need to know something else. And this is the game that they play now. If an adjudications officer, and I spent a year as an adjudications officer, so this isn't conjecture. This isn't like the talking head BS you're going to see on television. I was an inspector at Kennedy Airport for 4 years. I was an adjudications officer for 1 year. I was an agent for 26 years. And I investigated immigration fraud. I investigated foreign terrorists and foreign drug traffickers operating within our borders. I didn't read about it somewhere. I didn't do a study for a year, and now I proclaim myself to be an expert. If you tell the adjudications officers, you better look out for fraud because national security hangs in the balance. And then you tell them, oh, and by the way, you need to process a minimum of 12 applications or 15 applications per day. What you've now told those people, in spite of the warning about fraud being a national security issue, and it's a huge issue, the 9/11 Commission, to which I provided testimony, made it clear that this is a matter of nothing less than national security. But if you give them that kind of a quota, which they operate under now, you cannot deny more than maybe one application a month. Why? Because it takes under 30 minutes to approve an application. It can take days or longer to deny an application. If you deny an application, you have to have an agent very often go out and do an investigation. Lots of luck finding enough agents. There's about, I believe it's 500 or 600 investigators assigned to Citizenship and Immigration Services right now to go out and do field investigations when required. And meanwhile, Citizenship and Immigration Services today, without being buried under a comprehensive immigration reform program, processes well over 6 million applications per year right now. This is Lucy at the Bon Bon Factory on steroids. So if you tell these folks you've got to process at least 12 a day, they call for an investigation. If they can get an investigator to go out, which will take a long time, then the investigator writes up a report, then they write a formal denial, and the whole package goes to attorneys to check for legal sufficiency. Why? Because you have to anticipate that if you deny an application, whether it's for citizenship, for a green card, for political asylum, or for amnesty, that there's going to be a challenge. They're going to appeal it. They're going to get a lawyer, and the lawyer's going to go into court and say, this isn't right, the government is wrong, we're appealing it. So immediately, in anticipation of that, before the adjudicator can write the denial, he or she has to get an investigation done, has to write a formal denial, and that can take hours just to write the denial to get all the elements of that denial right, and then a lawyer checks it for sufficiency, and they kick it back to the adjudicator, and they tell them, rewrite the second paragraph. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking. They have to do 12 a day. So how many denials can they do and still meet the quota? Probably one or two denials a month. They really work their tails off. So what's the easiest thing for them to do? Approve it, approve it, approve it, let it go, approve it. The dreamers, aliens who are here illegally, they can be as old as 31, forget the nonsense, they're children. They just have to claim they came as kids. Again, no investigation, no field investigation. So guess what happens? There's a better than a 97% approval rate, or at least that was the going number several months ago. 97% approval rate. Almost perfect. Nobody made any mistakes. Nothing in the applications raised any eyebrows. Bang them in, give them their approval, and away they go. They get employment authorization, Social Security cards, and so forth. And we've seen dreamers who turned out to be fugitives in other countries, dreamers who went out and committed rape and murder and all kinds of violent crimes. But that doesn't matter because we have an agenda, and the agenda is flood America with people from other countries around the world, anybody but Americans. Am I a nativist? You're damn right I'm a nativist. I want to see Americans, black Americans, Latino Americans, white Americans, Asian Americans. I don't care about the ethnicity. You're born in America, you should have an absolute expectation that your government will stand behind you. Except today, when the government stands behind you, they're looking to stick a knife between your shoulder blades. This is madness. America and the American dream came about because the greatest generation came to the clear understanding that for America to do well, Americans needed to do well. The immigration laws initially were enforced by the Labor Department to protect the American worker, to help wages rise. And as wages got higher and we built a middle class, they bought homes and cars, and it fueled industry. And you talk to the executives of these corporations that are quick to slap an American flag on their product that maybe was manufactured in the United States, maybe, of parts that came from around the world, and they put that flag on there, you know, proud American, whatever. They don't care about America. They care about the bottom line. During the Second World War, you had corporations working for free to help the United States government defeat Nazi Germany and the Japanese fascists. Today, everything has a price tag. Everything has a price tag. And what it does to America or Americans is of scant concern. Right now, the greatest number of STEM students, science, technology, engineering, math students, are coming to the United States from China. And they go back to China, and they're helping them to build their nuclear fleet, helping them to build fighter airplanes and consumer products. Let's be fair. But the point is, why are we exporting American technology to our adversary? And make no mistake, China is our adversary. I was just on Dennis Michael Lynch's program over at Newsmax, DML Unfiltered, and he really is unfiltered. I get a kick out of being on Dennis's program. And we did a one-hour special, and you could still see the video on his website. You could see it on my website. The link is available. And on my way home, and it was a great program, but I want you to go watch it. It was a full hour that he gave me. It was a fun interview. I'd known him for a long time. He filmed several documentaries on immigration that I appeared in, so that's how we know each other. But on my way home, my Uber driver was a young man from Afghanistan, 25 years old, studied economics in India, and then came to America. And he said, you know, when I was in Afghanistan, when I was studying in India, and his brother apparently studied engineering, I think, in India also, we had this idea about America. My gosh, he almost sounded like Ronald Reagan, the shining city on the hill, you know. America was a magical place. And then he says, I come here, and no, it's not magical. And he said to me, I got to ask you a stupid question. I said, okay. He said, this is going to sound funny to you, because I came here from another country, but where are the Americans? Wherever I go, everybody has accents that are so thick I can't understand them. And I drive through these neighborhoods driving my Uber car, and I see so many signs in Chinese, in Korean, in Spanish. He said, where's the Americans? And he said, there is no middle class in America. He said, in most countries, the middle class lives a decent life. They go on vacations. They go out to dinner. He said, I drive these people into the city. And he said, they work and they work and they work and they work and they're chasing their tail and they can't seem to catch a break. And he said, they go home late. They're lucky if they have dinner. And then at the crack of dawn, boom, they're heading back into the office again, killing themselves, and they can't even keep even. He said, where's the middle class? Where's this American country that I used to read about? What is wrong with your government? What is wrong with your government? He said, I'm thankful I'm here. I don't want to be ungrateful. But this isn't the America that I read about. And I said, be rest assured, it's not the America that I grew up in either. A while back, I wrote an article for Caps Web, I believe it was, and I called it The Fencing of America. Now, I wasn't talking about building a wall on the Mexican border. In law enforcement, a fence is somebody who sells stolen property. That's what a fence is, you know. You bring them a stolen ring or a stolen watch or a stolen computer, and they sell it. That's known as a fencing operation. Our country is being stolen by our politicians. I mean, you listen to Hillary Clinton, and I've got to tell you, and I'm registered as a Democrat. I'm not being partisan. But you have the head of the FBI testify before Congress about how what she said did not square with reality, and then she's out on the campaign trail telling everybody, oh, the FBI said that I was truthful. Everything I said was the way I did it. And if you compare what she's saying to what the head of the FBI said, it's night and day. We're talking about two different people, two different sets of events. And I still don't understand how the hell they haven't charged her with anything. People probably lost their lives. There are allegations that because of her sloppy, slipshod handling of intelligence, and you got to wonder why it was that she didn't want to use a government server. This is crazy. Undoubtedly, information leaked. How in the world do you allow this to happen? You know, I mean, you look at this madness, you look at this nonsense that we're going to import all these foreign workers, but magically all the Americans who are out of work are going to find jobs, and they're going to make more money than they've ever earned. Labor is a commodity. George Borjas, the noted Harvard economist, has written about it, where he made the point that labor is a commodity not unlike petroleum or diamonds or anything else. And when you flood a market with a commodity, you drive the price down. It's called supply and demand. It's classic economic theory. what Clinton is promising you is a lie. It's an empty promise. It's bad enough when politicians lie because they have to appeal to everybody from every perspective, so they BS the world. But this goes beyond that. Because if you listen to what she promises, it's physically impossible for her to deliver. And then she was talking about how Trump doesn't have a plan to defeat ISIS. And she's going to bomb ISIS, and she's going to give weapons to the people on the ground in those countries. I think that's what maybe happened in Benghazi, but then what do I know? And maybe the wrong people got the weapons, but what do I know? But not a word about what we're going to do domestically. And if you read the 9/11 Commission report, and I hope that Donald Trump, during the debate, asks Hillary that one question. Did you read the 9/11 Commission report? Because if you read the report, it was abundantly clear that immigration was at the root cause of the ability of terrorists to enter the United States and embed themselves in the United States. And it wasn't the Mexican border. What the 9/11 Commission specifically focused on was the ability of aliens to enter the United States through international airport with altered or counterfeit or stolen passports, and then use immigration benefits to get married to an American, to claim political asylum, to overstay a visa, and then count on America's non-enforcement to get lost. I believe, and I don't want to misspeak, but I believe that Muhammad Atta was stopped for speeding just a couple days before 9/11. Imagine if he had been turned over to immigration. Without even knowing it, we would have disrupted the 9/11 attack. And I could tell you that my first solo case as an immigration agent, this was in 1976, involved a citizen of Israel, a young man who had come to the United States with an altered visa. He had entered the United States previously. He had a one-time visa. Somebody had altered the wording on it. They were very unsophisticated back then. It was basically a stamp and a passport. And altered the date of expiration and changed the number 1 to the number 2, the number of times the visa was valid for entry. And they picked it up at the airport, and it turned out that he was here to get the money to buy explosives back in Israel to launch an attack or participate in an attack on an oil refinery. I made that discovery during a routine, no big deal case that was given to me as my first case that I could work on my own without a senior partner, because for your first year as an agent, you essentially don't go to the bathroom without your senior partner. They're there to evaluate you. They're there to make certain you don't make mistakes. And they're there to make certain that you really should be an agent, because during that first year, you can be fired without cause. They could simply say, nope, you don't make it. You just don't lack the ability. You lack the skills. You lack the determination. You're just not suited for the job, and they can remove you. So for those people to say, oh, they never fire civil servants, and I've been there when agents who were there many years got fired. Civil servants can be fired. Don't let anybody lie to you about this nonsense. And usually it's the political appointees at the top of the food chain who are doing the bidding of the administration, whether it's Democrat or Republican, that keep immigration agents from doing an effective job, because this is about the exploitation of cheap labor. And it's not just illegal aliens, it's the high-tech workers also. This is about driving down wages so that greedy bums who can't seem to ever get enough money, even when they're worth billions, can get more money. That's what it's about. But in any event, this was a solo case. The guy was in our detention facility. All I had to do was take a statement. And as I spoke to him, I realized there was something terribly wrong. I kept pushing the issue. Eventually, we reached out to the Israeli consulate. And what followed was an investigation that we conducted here in the United States. The Israelis did a parallel investigation overseas. We prevented the bombing of their oil refinery. Routine case. Nearly half the FBI's 10 most wanted, from what I have read, aren't arrested by the FBI, but by local police doing routine police work, stopping a car for running a red light or speeding or blowing a stop sign. And then you find out, uh-oh, there's more to this guy than meets the eye. Routine police work. Routine investigations. I could point to a bunch of other investigations that I did in my 30 years where what starts out as nothing turned into something serious. I found a guy working in a factory. He was from Honduras. His questions didn't quite match. claimed that he had become a United States citizen. Turned out, not only wasn't he a naturalized citizen, he had escaped from a federal penitentiary. He had been previously deported after he did time for his involvement in a murder. Was deported, came back, was arrested, prosecuted for reentry after deportation. He escaped from a federal penitentiary and got a job at a glass factory in Brooklyn. We had no idea about any of this until we brought him into the office, and he realized he was going to be fingerprinted, and he knew immediately that we'd know what the story was. So on the way into the office, he fessed up and told us, hey, I gave you a fake name. When you run my fingerprints, you're going to find out, so I may as well tell you I escaped from the penitentiary. You don't know what you don't know until you're out there making the arrests and getting your hands dirty. It's like the lottery. You got to be in it to win it. We're not in it. We're not in it. We used to have expertise at immigration about various ethnic immigrant crime groups, whether it was the Italian mob, the Israeli mob, the Irish Republican Army. I arrested a guy suspected of being involved with the IRA, took a gun off him. We prosecuted him federally, illegal alien in possession of a firearm. We arrested Jamaican drug gangs, drug posses, Colombian drug gangs, Mexican drug gangsters, all of that. And we had informants in all those communities. That's pretty much gone because we're doing nothing to enforce the law once people get into the United States, they're home free. Get past the border, whether it's by evading the border patrol or lying to the inspector at that port of entry and saying, oh, I'm here just for, I'm just visiting for 30 days, I'm going home. And then they vanish and nobody looks for them. Nobody looks for them. And among the people who are hiding in plain sight are people who are fugitives from justice. And this isn't new. We saw this after the Second World War. Think of, you know, most of those bums are dead now, but think of those bastards that were the Nazi war criminals fleeing justice after what they had done in various concentration camps. They came to America and embedded themselves in communities. And, you know, you remember those days, decades ago primarily, when 60 Minutes or somebody would interview some neighbor and they'd say, do you know the guy that you live next door to supposedly killed 5,000 men, women, and children? And the guy would say, gee, he was a nice guy. He watered his lawn, trimmed his rose bush, and always smiled at me. Like, you know, we were concerned he was here to grow crabgrass. He was trimming his rose bush. We're naive. We're stupid. We're in the middle of a war on terror. The terrorists have us in their sights. They continue to prove it to us. They keep on carrying out attacks, whether it's in Nice, whether it's in Belgium, whether it's in England. And don't you love this one in England? Well, the guy was of Somali descent, but he's from Norway. So we think it was just mental illness that compelled him to take a knife and stab five people and kill an American woman who was 60-odd years old teaching in a school in England. Oh, the guy had mental problems. Right. Let's ignore the obvious that maybe there was a nexus between him and ISIS. We're playing a deadly game. We're playing a deadly game. American lives are hanging in the balance. And we kept hearing from our political leaders, if you remember right after 9/11, the terrorists got to get it right only once. We got to be right 100% of the time. And then they told the lie. We're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them here. Folks, we're fighting them here as well as over there. Terrorist is arrested in America. We fought them over here. If we're not fighting them here, why are they putting us through the kinds of stringent search routines that they do at the airports every time we try to get on an airplane? We're not fighting them over here? Where was the World Trade Center located? In Kabul? No, it was located in Manhattan. Where was the Pentagon? Where is Shanksville, Pennsylvania? Look at the attack in California. Look at the Boston Marathon bombing. Look at the Times Square bombing. Thankfully, that one did not result in casualties. And that guy was a naturalized U.S. citizen. We gave him citizenship roughly a year before he tried to kill a bunch of Americans at Times Square. Lied on his application. And nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about enforcing the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. God forbid. God forbid. And then Donald Trump comes out and says, well, we've got to be careful that we don't let Muslims into the United States. And I was misquoted by a reporter at NBC who never interviewed me, but took a quote out of context from another article and said in this article that Trump's immigration plan would cripple immigration. I never said that. The other people didn't say it would cripple immigration. What I said is it's not doable. And if they bothered to go through this thing, and if this idiot reporter, who, by the way, this idiot reporter has his JD, his doctorate in jurisprudence from, I think it's Cornell, from some Ivy League school. I mean, I find it remarkable. And his name is Ari Melber, A-R-I, and then his last name is M-E-L-B-E-R, Ari Melber over at MSNBC. And I used to be on MSNBC hundreds of times, or at least 100 times, and then all of a sudden they decided, oh, no, this goes contrary to the agenda, the open borders agenda. And what I had said, see, here's the quote on his headline. Experts say Trump's Muslim ban would cripple immigration system. Even Doris Meisner, our former commissioner, and I've locked horns with her a gazillion times. I think she was dead wrong. She created much of our dysfunction. But Doris Meisner said there'll be no way of knowing who these people are, which was my complaint. And I'll be honest. I have a problem with leaving people or excluding people based on religion because not all Muslims are bad guys. Muhammad Ali was a Muslim. He was hardly a terrorist. What's more practical and more sensible and doable, and Trump is now calling for it, but nobody wants to recognize that fact, is do it by country. You can certainly bar people from certain countries that are your adversaries. And you know something? Jimmy Carter, and I didn't like Jimmy Carter. He was, you know, off the rails as far as I was concerned. When our embassy was overrun in the late 70s, and I was one of the agents who was out there looking for these Iranian students in the United States, there were real concerns that some of them might try to do terrorism here in the United States. Jimmy Carter turned around, and I thought he was a terrible president, and said, we are not going to allow Iranians into the United States. I mean, we had stopped just short of declaring war against Iran, but this was a bad situation. And he said, we're not admitting Iranians. If an Iranian shows up, we turn them around. They're not getting into the United States. So this isn't crazy. This isn't crazy, and there's precedent. And you know that Jimmy Carter has been the dementor of the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. There is nothing off the wall about saying, we're not going to let people from certain countries into the United States. Russians had to get a waiver because they believed in communism. And as I remember it, it was a D3, goodness, I'm trying to remember what the exact waiver was, but it was an acknowledgement that we're letting them in even though their belief in government, they're communists, which is antithetical to America. Whatever happened to the notion that you don't admit people into the country whose objective is to overturn your government and your way of life? We have that right. When someone knocks on the door and you say to the person, who's there? And the guy says, Joe Smith. And you say, Joe, what do you want? Well, I want to come in and steal your stuff and kill you and rape your sister or whatever. You turn around and say, no, I'm not letting you in. What you want to do is against my own best interest. That's why you say, who's there? What do you want? Isn't that the typical question? Someone bangs on the who's there? You want to identify them. What do you want? Why are you banging on my door? That's the job of the inspector at the airport, the inspector at the port of entry. Again, I did that job for 4 solid years. It's the equivalent of a homeowner looking through the peephole. In fact, when I helped Arizona defend themselves against the outrageous Justice Department lawsuit, and I gave them a deposition, and they just did something very similar to help South Carolina because they're now suing over the refugees from Syria, I described my tenure as an inspector at the airport as having my eye to the peephole on America's front door. This isn't complicated. This is very simple. So what Donald Trump said is not only reasonable, but it is doable. You can say, we're not going to let people in if they are, in fact, citizens of countries that we know have a problem with terrorism until we can properly screen them. And that's what raised the big stink about the refugees. Because the refugees can't be vetted. It's not that I had this wild idea. It's that James Comey, the head of the FBI, and Michael Steinback, his assistant director for counterterrorism, national security at the FBI, both said there's no way to vet these people. Understand what that means. John Brennan, the head of the CIA, said that his concern was that ISIS terrorists have embedded themselves in refugee flows, and they're determined to come to America. He said that at a hearing just a couple of months ago. That hasn't changed. And Hillary wants to have a five-fold increase in the number of refugees, and we've already taken care of tens of thousands. Now, here's the other kicker, and you may not know this, and I wrote about this for Front Page Magazine, and this also goes back to the article that I wrote for capsweb.org. What Hillary wants to do, undermine our national security. In fact, the topic, the title of my commentary for Caps Web that was just posted a couple days ago, Hillary Clinton's immigration goals would irrevocably undermine national security. In 2007, I had testified before three House hearings and one Senate hearing on the issue of comprehensive immigration reform, the goal of the Clinton administration, if God forbid she's elected. And both she and Kane have said, oh, within 100 days of taking office, we're going to legalize everybody. Well, I looked at what we were doing, and I said, you know, the idea of giving millions of people identity documents without being able to verify their identities scares the hell out of me. And I said they should give it a new name. I called it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. And, in fact, Senator Jeff Sessions liked what I said so much, he quoted from my commentary from the floor of the United States Senate on three separate occasions during the floor debates back in 07. And unlike so many politicians who plagiarize, Sessions is a class act, a man of incredible integrity, former federal prosecutor, sent me a certificate. I'm looking at it right now. It hangs in my bedroom, where he said that in part he believed that he was able to persuade his colleagues in the Senate to vote down that very bad legislation by quoting my articles from the floor of the Senate during the debates. I can't tell you how honored I was and how proud I was. And that's the point. It's not an anti-immigrant position. We're just saying if you can't figure out who's banging on your door, if you're smart, you don't let them in. Maybe you call the police and say to the police, I've got some weirdo on my porch. Come and get him. Come and get him. People do that. That's the normal thing to do. I can tell you as an agent, there were times, and especially some really high-crime neighborhoods, if I knocked on a door because we weren't in uniform, especially elderly couples, would say, well, how do I know you're an agent? You'd hold up your credentials to the people, and they'd say, we're calling the cops. Fine. So the police would come. We'd have a conversation with the police officers. We'd show them our credentials. We'd explain why we were there. And then the police would vouch for us, and they would let us in. They were showing good common sense. Just because some guy is waving a badge doesn't mean he is who he says he is. And that's the problem with people who come in at ports of entry and lie about their identities or use false passports. You would think with the risks this high, you would think that we would be redoubling our efforts to screen people seeking entry into the United States. But this administration is off the rails. We have a rogue president. There's no other way of describing it. You know, we should be referring to him as the anarchist in chief. In fact, along those lines, I have to tell you, I was just interviewed by a political writer for LifeZet, and, you know, I write for them. I have a few of my articles on their website. And this writer, Brendan Kirby, did interview me, and he quoted me accurately, did a good job. And the article that he wrote, with the title was, Obama Throws Open the Prison Gates, and the subtitle, with 214 commutations, this president has more than the released more than the previous nine presidents combined. Think about that. And Obama says, oh, these are nonviolent drug traffickers. Really? Nonviolent? Let me tell you, he released 214 in a single day. Can you imagine giving clemency to 214? And these weren't people with a couple of joints in their back pocket, and that was the point that I made during my interview. I said, look, if someone gets grabbed for possessing a couple of joints in their back pocket, a couple of marijuana cigarettes, I don't think they belong in jail. I don't think it serves anybody's purpose. But the federal system generally doesn't take that level drug offender and imprison them or prosecute them. I'm speaking from personal experience, assigned to the DEA task force, assigned to DEA intelligence. I've worked with the FBI and ATF on these cases, as well as local police. In New York, because we are one of the hubs for narcotics trafficking, if you call the U.S. attorney and say to them, we just caught a guy with 5 or 10 kilos of cocaine. You would think that's a big deal, right? 5 kilos of cocaine works out to somewhere around 12 pounds. You know, this isn't personal use, okay? They'd say to you, oh, that's all? Go to the state prosecutors. We can't be bothered. We can't be bothered. You had to bring them a tractor trailer filled to the brim before they would want to really take the case, unless there was another underlying reason. You know, we know the guy is using the money to fund terrorism and so forth. Okay, now we'll prosecute it. Other than that, they are not going to prosecute that case. So Obama says, oh, these are nonviolent. And the point that I make is that if you're basically using the drugs you're carrying, you know, you've got a problem and we need to help you. But if you're selling quantities of drugs to other people, you're screwing up their lives. If you want to look at the violence that's out there on the street, it's not the guns owned by law-abiding citizens. Most violent crime has a nexus, direct or indirect, to drugs and to gangs. And when I was at DEA Intelligence, I found to my astonishment that in New York City, 60% of the people that we were arresting at the DEA task force for drug-related crimes were foreign-born. This is a serious problem. And by the way, the money from the drug trade, and we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars, we're not talking, you know, a couple of cents, is fueling the cartels and fueling terrorist organizations. Drug trafficking is one of the key ways by which the Taliban and other terrorist organizations fund their murderous activities. Understand that. So the drugs screw up Americans' lives, American kids especially. And to show you how bad it is, if you want to know how secure the border is, all the lies, the border is great, no one knows what we're talking about. Oh, the border, oh, they're going to want alligators in the moat, if you remember that ridiculous speech Obama made. You want to know how secure the border is? Understand something. Neither heroin nor cocaine are produced in the United States. Both substances are illegal. Under no circumstances are either heroin or cocaine legal. And we don't produce it here. So every single gram of those substances have to be smuggled into the United States across our borders. There's no transporter like on Star Trek, okay? It's smuggled in. We've never had more Americans addicted to heroin than right now. It is so bad that in New York City, school nurses in public schools have been given the antidote to heroin overdoses. Think about that. That's the magnitude of the problem. So we're going to take people who are in jail for moving huge quantities of drugs and put them back out on the street. And what do you think they're going to do? What's the likelihood? We've already seen where nearly 180,000 criminal aliens were turned loose by this administration, and according to what was divulged at a hearing recently by the House Immigration Subcommittee, where I myself have testified numerous times, they've committed more than, I believe it was at least 140 additional murders. 140. And when Clinton says, oh, Donald Trump paints the dark picture of America, it is a dark picture. And who turned out the lights? She did. Along with Mr. Obama. Well, Donald Trump is a fearmonger. Yes, and so is she. Except she's teaching, and Mr. Obama is teaching children to be afraid of their worst enemy. Who's their worst enemy? The police. Think about it. It's the police. They're your enemy. Are there cops who shouldn't be cops? You're damn right. Is there a president who shouldn't be a president? You're damn right. Are there doctors who are found guilty of malpractice? Yes. In fact, I did some digging around, and there are hundreds of thousands of lawsuits filed every year for medical malpractice. Should they be practicing medicine? Maybe some are false accusations, you know, that lawsuits are big business. But I assure you there are thousands of doctors who should find a different way to make a living. Maybe they should work in the butcher shop. But no one's rioting about that. You have cops who shouldn't be police officers. No argument. And I expect professionalism from every man and woman who carries the badge. And I'll tell you something. I had the privilege of working with many police officers across the country. And you will not find a better bunch of Americans than our law enforcement officers. They are dedicated. They are honest. They're conscientious. Someone once described police officers as those people, or federal agents as well, law enforcement, those people who run toward that which any sane person would run from. That's what you do in law enforcement. You get between the innocent people and the bad guy, the sociopath, the violent thug, the terrorist. That's what you do. So you have Mr. Obama, people loose, who should be in jail. This is absolutely remarkable. Now, here's one. I got to just read this paragraph from that article in which I was quoted in LifeSet. Although the White House described the recipients of being released as low-level and nonviolent, court records indicate many were extensively involved in drug trafficking networks, and some demonstrated a profound contempt for the law. And they said here, take Asher Atkins, an Indiana man who was serving a 52-year sentence for multiple counts of distribution of methamphetamine and two counts of using a firearm during a drug trafficking crime. I want you to think about that. For all this talk about get the guns off the street, get the guns off the street, get the guns off the street, they're commuting the sentence of a guy who has two arrests for using a firearm while dealing narcotics. And they go on and say this. This is astonishing. According to court records, Atkins and a co-conspirator made as many as 40 trips to California beginning in 1989 to buy large quantities of meth. Atkins sold those drugs to street-level drug dealers. Atkins carried guns because the trips were, quote, risky business. Another drug dealer testified that Atkins pulled out a gun from under his truck seat and showed it to him. Now listen to the balance of the story. Atkins absconded before the last day of his trial in 1993 and remained a fugitive until 1999. A jury had convicted him in absentia and a judge sentenced him after his apprehension. Are you kidding me? And here's my quote. I hope you like it. You have a president hell-bent on releasing federal convicts, said Michael Cutler, a retired immigration agent who served on the federal drug task force in New York. To be prosecuted in federal court, you have to reach a certain level. They're not going to put a guy in jail because of three joints in his back pocket. Cutler said that he agrees long prison sentences are inappropriate for people who are truly low-level drug, well, I wouldn't have used the word felons, but okay, drug felons, defendants who are more addicts than profiteers. And here's my final quote. But if you're talking about people who were willing to sell drugs to other people, now we're in a different ballpark, he said. So you've got the president talking about poverty, talking about crime, turning people loose, and where are they probably going to go? To the minority communities where there's high unemployment, high crime, high violence, and the police are the bad guys. But the drug dealers aren't. If this president isn't the anarchist in chief, I don't know what else to call him. I know that, you know, Trump has his issues, and I'm not part of the Trump campaign. I've never spoken to him or his people. But I want you to know something. If we continue down this path, we're going down the path of anarchy. This is not sustainable. We can't allow millions of people to get lawful status. And by the way, they would all then be able to bring their children here. They'd immediately be enrolled in our schools, which are having enough problems right now. You could be looking at an influx of tens of millions of non-English-speaking foreign students if we legalize, let's say, 30 million illegal aliens. It would be a free-for-all. We would never, ever put that genie back in the bottle again. There'd be no putting the toothpaste back in the tube. Mr. Obama told one truthful statement when he was elected. Change has come to America. And he is determined before he walks out of that Oval Office in just a few months to inflict as much change on America as he can. And Hillary Clinton will be his partner in crime, literally and figuratively. You know, if this stuff gets your motor running, and it should, then I ask that you get involved. And by the way, there's much more at stake this election day than the race for the White House. Every single seat in the House of Representatives, every one-third of the seats in the United States Senate are all up for grabs. It's important that we elect people who represent Americans, American workers, American students, American children. It's important to be a nativist. We live in a global community. No argument. Countries are supposed to look out for their citizens before they look out for anyone else. It's okay for parents to give money to charity, but if and only if their own children aren't going to bed hungry at night. 1 in 4 American kids now lives below the poverty line, and in America's minority communities, the numbers are far worse. We have a president who's turning drug dealers loose in their communities. If we see the occasional police shooting that turns out to not be justified, it needs to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. I have zero tolerance for that nonsense. It's not nonsense for that, those tragedies. But I guarantee you, far more people are dying and will continue to die because of criminal aliens who've been turned loose, and now because of convicted drug felon thugs that are being turned loose. So the big focus is on police misconduct. How about presidential misconduct? First and foremost, the country is supposed to look out for the safety and well-being of its citizens. This administration has done the exact opposite. It couldn't have gone in the more opposite direction if it tried. And believe me, for whatever reasons, and I have no idea what's between Mr. Obama's ears or what his thoughts are about, but what he's doing is so dangerous, and particularly dangerous to American kids living in the tough neighborhoods, the minority neighborhoods, where crime is already a huge issue. If he was really concerned about American lives, if he really believed that black and white and Latino and Asian and American lives mattered, he'd be protecting them by keeping drug dealers in jail, by not turning terrorists loose from Guantanamo, by securing our borders to prevent the entry of criminals and terrorists, and not making sure that American jobs would go to foreign workers instead of Americans who desperately want to support themselves and their families. That's what the next president should be focused on. That's what our next Congress must be focused on. The decision's up to us. If you're a parent, if you're a grandparent, this isn't about us, folks. It's about our children and our grandchildren. Something for you to think about. I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport, and indeed it's not. We got to this mess because far too many people have not bothered to take the time to educate themselves to see through the lies. When Hillary Clinton can stand there to wild cheers and tell people that she's going to raise wages and give you wage equality and link it to a minimum wage of $10.10 an hour, it's $21,000 a year. What does that make you equal to? The words should be clear. Besides the fact she has a serious issue with telling the truth, I think she's pathological, it does not add up. 2 and 2 don't make 19, you know? It's pretty obvious that what she's promising would be a disaster and runs contrary to what she says she wants to accomplish. America and Americans can't afford the nonsense. We are at crossroads. Much hangs in the balance. There's chaos throughout the Middle East. We have a problem with drug addiction in America. And the last thing we need are more criminals being turned loose, our borders left wide open, drugs flowing onto our streets, and Americans losing their jobs to foreign workers who then send money out of the economy to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars a year. If ever you wanted to consider whether we're on the right path or not, I think the evidence is compelling. I hope you agree. Please let your friends and neighbors know about my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract, LifeSet. Please, folks, get involved. We need you out there fighting, and have those conversations with your friends and neighbors, and don't be intimidated by people that make false accusations against you. Stand up for yourself. Stand up for America. Make sure that you take sides peacefully, thoughtfully, persuasively. Get your voice heard. That's the American thing to do. I thank you for joining me. I hope you have a great weekend coming up. Hope to see you again next week at the same time, same place, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.